Hello, Space Junkies, and welcome to What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Believe it or not, I am your host, Scott Baltman, coming to you from the depths of the despair virus or something like that. Anyway, to help me muddle through this week's episode, it's my original podcast co-host, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, take it away before I crumble into a pile of dust.
As I'm going for my last breath. Hey, Scott, welcome back.
Thank you. We did at least have official theme music, but it doesn't hold a candle to what you guys pulled off last week without me. A cappella, ad lib, theme music, what more could I ask for?
It's Wapacapella. I don't know how you say it. Wapacapella, whatever the brand name would be, I guess. So.
Don't make
but
me laugh.
All the many tricks that we can do on What a Piece of Junk. So hopefully those that are space junkies that are listening now understand the reference. If not, go back to our last episode, episode 111, so you can hear Nathan and I, ad-lib the song. So,
yeah, it was something else. And speaking of Nathan and ad-libs, here comes the gooey chewy, the man of a thousand nicknames. I don't have the steam to go through the whole list this episode, so here he is, Nathan Miracle.
Hello. Yes, man, I had a great time doing the Wapacapella theme song.
Wapacapella. Come on, guys. Wapacapella. It's not hard.
Yeah, it reminded me of back in the 90s watching Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
And they had Rockapella. Yeah. That was good stuff.
Except they knew what they were doing. Yeah. Well, to be fair, we knew what we were doing.
You did know what you were doing.
We did it regardless.
That's right. Yeah, we did it anyway. All right, I'm putting Nathan in the driver's seat for most of the episode. I'm going to push buttons, but I'm going to let him be the master of ceremonies here so he can take us through the questions. This week, we'll be doing our analysis of two Star Wars shows. Gosh, I have a feeling that like two or three years from now, we'll talk about how these were the glory days when we had two different Star Wars shows coming on each week.
I hope we're going to continue with lots of it.
I hope so too, but it all depends on what Mr. Iger has planned. But we'll talk about that at a different point.
I'm wondering if two or three years from now we look back and go, oh my gosh, we only had two shows to talk about.
That's possible too.
How much easier did we have it back then?
Yeah. So, anyway, this The Convert, not to be confused with The Covert, and The Bad Batch episode, Pabu. All right, Nathan, take it away for the five questions for The Mandalorian, The Convert.
Yeah, so The Convert, that could refer to any number of characters in this particular episode. So I have to say that I really liked this episode. But to hear what we liked about this episode, we're going to dive straight into the questions because, as mentioned, we've got two episodes to cover. We got to go pretty quick. So, number one, what did we like about this episode? Derek, what was your favorite thing?
There's a lot going on in this episode and a lot to digest, right? Because we're talking about the difference between Mandalorian and Andor, right, on our last episode with, Mandalorian is fun and whimsical and Andor is serious and dark, right? And then here come Filoni and Favreau and say, here, have a sprinkling of darkness.
I got your whimsy righty.
Yeah, no joke. So
yeah, we heard you like dark episodes, so here you go.
Dark episodes and in the dark, but better lighting than
Yeah.
So kudos to them for at least making sure that that wasn't completely in the dark for us. So, it's hard to say. I really think that whole side with Dr. Pershing, and Ella Kane was good. And probably the best part. But it leaves me wanting to kind of understand where they're going with this. I don't know if they're wanting to fill in the gaps now with how things, and I don't know if I want to say this now because it obviously ties into question three, right? When we say what ties into the rest of the universe. So I think I'll refrain from there and just say, I think that was my favorite part was again, side story. of, you know, really expanding the universe with where we're at currently, you know, 5 years, 7 years, wherever we're at past, post Return of the Jedi. But I would definitely say that that side story was probably my favorite part. So,
all right. Well, that was a good chunk of the episode. So, yes.
You, okay. You got pretty they much did, they did do the Easter egg meme of Darkseid has cookies. So
yes, yes,
they did. That was pretty cool. So, Scott, what was your favorite part of this episode?
I'm going to keep it short and sweet and simple. The Starfighter battle with Bo-Katan and Mando facing off against some TIE interceptors, and the jumping out of Bo-Katan's ship, hitting the jetpack to get into the N1. Beautiful. And then, of course, I love Bo-Katan. I think Katie Sackhoff's so great, and the character, she's so great. And then I have another reason to love her, because she pulled off the one-winged angel to turn around and blast those guys to pieces. Good times. I can't ask for anything more from a hot redhead in a suit of Beskar armor who knows how to handle stick.
And on that note, I'm going to tell you my favorite thing about this episode. And it does actually relate to Bo-Katan and also to Derek's favorite part of this episode. And that is the title. As I mentioned earlier, the convert could apply to a whole host of characters in this episode. And I just love it when we've got titles that can have not just two meanings, but several. The convert could be Din himself. He converted back to the way because he was redeemed. It could be Bo-Katan because she was accepted into the coven. It could be the Dr. Pershing himself because he converted over to the Republic's way of thinking, but then also converted back to his old imperial ways, sort of. I'm sure we'll talk more about that. And at times it seemed like Elia could be the convert, but kind of a convert in disguise, going undercover, because she's clearly not Dr. Pershing's friend, no matter what she says. And of
lies
course,
lies and deceit.
And of course, we converted the trap joke to the opposite way.
Yes.
Someone was telling a Mon Cal, oh, it's a trap. He's just like, no, you can't say that. Only my people can say that.
He did have that look on his face like, wait, what?
A trap. Yeah, so you know, lots to love in this episode. So when I say the title, don't take that as saying that, oh, only the title was good. No, the whole episode was great, but the way the title related to pretty much all of the episode, even parts of the episode that didn't necessarily directly relate to each other, I just loved that aspect of it. But that's not to say that I loved every aspect of the episode. So we're going to go reverse around on what did you dislike the most. So, Scott, we'll start with you. What did you dislike the most, or perhaps like the least, about this episode?
I think I disliked the way that the Republic reintegration policy gives people the serial numbers. Like, Dr. Pershing is not Dr. Pershing. He was like L57 or whatever. I don't remember exactly the numbers. I dislike it for two reasons. One, it's dehumanizing, and I feel like it's counter-purpose to what they're trying to do and make those people feel wanted and accepted. It's like they're robbing them of their identity. I get that they're kind of trying to undo what the Empire had given to them, so they no longer have ranks or titles, you know, but they could still have names. That doesn't seem very like a very good idea. And secondly, the other reason I dislike that policy is it makes it hard to keep track of the characters for us to talk about them here on the podcast. Mm-hmm. They don't have real names. Come on, people, work with me here, Lucasfilm. But I think that that was part of the message of this story, was that this was a bad idea and the whole reintegration thing is not working, because Kane sure ain't reintegrated. She's just fooling them all into thinking that she is.
All right. And Derek, what was your least favorite part of this episode?
It's hard to say, right? It's one of those episodes I didn't feel like I hated any particular thing about it. I guess it's kind of, it's almost connected to the other things about it. I really liked the story there. Like I said, I would say probably at this point would have been that when they Bo-Katan and Mando came back and they were quote unquote bathed in the waters of the mines of Mandalore, then they were, you know, reunited with the clan there. And they were just all welcoming back Bo-Katan. And it was kind of just like, okay. So I guess anyone can be forgiven, I guess, maybe. So it's, I don't know. It just seemed like they were such. So it was like they were all anti Din and Bo for all this stuff. And like, you know, you lost your way and all this stuff. And then she just happens to save Din and she's now all of a sudden welcome back. Then everybody's like, hooray. And I was like, okay. I don't know if it's mocking religion in a way or I don't know. It was just kind of like, okay, I guess all is forgiven then, that you just happen to just jump into some water and all right. So I guess that would probably be my least favorite. You're muted, Nathan.
We've lost you, Nathan.
That does make sense. I would say that my least favorite part kind of relates to what Scott was talking about. So I agree, giving them the numbers instead of names. It's like the opposite of what the clones did in the Clone Wars. The clones were given numbers and they took names for themselves. Here we have characters who had names and were given numbers. And it's really making the New Republic out to be not much better than the Empire was, which I agree is kind of the point. You know, this might be why we have the Resistance in the first place, because Leia recognized, hey, this isn't really better. It's just different. But if I had to pick one specific thing that was my least favorite moment of that episode, it was when Alaya and Dr. Pershing jumped off the train and were not scathed at all.
They were perfectly fine. Tuck and roll.
Yeah, tuck and roll. Doesn't matter that we're jumping out onto metal. Doesn't matter that if we miss, we go flying off into the Coruscant night where we will probably hit a speeder before we hit the ground. doesn't matter. We're fine. Just tuck and roll. Everything's good. No bruises, nothing.
I think we are bumping up against some budget limitations because them jumping off the train, the effects weren't super great. And I think they could have done a more dramatic interpretation of that if they had had more money for the special effects of each episode. Because we have a certain expectation for Star Wars special effects because, I mean, they kind of redefined the whole genre multiple times over across multiple decades. Right. And, doing a weekly show with that kind of budget is prohibitively expensive, even for somebody like Disney who has, you know, gobs of money. But as we have seen over the financial reports in the past few months, you know, Disney Plus is not making as much money as they wanted to. And so they're going to have to start making cuts. And I think season 3 of The Mandalorian is suffering a bit from that. So you could tell that in this train jump scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yes, Disney has gobs of money, but they are still a business. They need to turn a profit on each thing that they do. So as much as I would love it for them to just throw money at the problem, they wouldn't stay in business, even as Disney. They just can't do that and not make a profit. All right, well, time for question number 3. And, man, there are some big ones here. Question number 3 is, what connections did we draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy? I'm going to point out the two really big obvious ones and hope that you guys have some more. But the big obvious ones were both in the Pershing storyline. First off, the area where we first see Pershing and he's giving his speech, that is the exact same theater as where Anakin and Palpatine went to see the opera. Where we heard about the tale of Darth Plagueis the Wise. From the outside, You can tell from the carpet and everything, it is the exact same setup. So either it's the exact same theater or they have multiple identical theaters on Coruscant, which I guess is not out of the realm of possibility, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be the same theater.
That's the Carmike Cinemas of Coruscant. You have all kinds of different franchises.
And then the other big parallel we have is the mountaintop on Coruscant, the only place where you can see land. When I first saw that, I thought, oh man, that's such an interesting thing. Then I realized, wait, no, I have seen this before. And I looked it up and it did appear in a few other places. It's appeared in some stories from
the
High Republic.
The High Republic. That's the one. The really old Republic. well, I guess the not quite as old Republic as the
old Republic,
the Middle Age Republic.
One of those republics. I'm starting to think that the best thing about the Empire was it wasn't called a republic. we also saw it in an episode of The Clone Wars. Amidala gives a speech where she appears over the mountaintop in a big holographic form. So we have seen that in a few different places. Those were the two big parallels that I saw. Derek, what parallels did you see that we haven't talked about?
So as I was mentioning earlier, what I liked about this episode so much, and you guys hit a little bit on it too, as well as my earlier comments, and then why I was trying to not say it in what I disliked about it, because it wasn't so much a dislike. So... And there's a lot of people out there that didn't like this episode, right? This is the most divisive Mandalorian episode out there, right? Because it's like the lowest scoring. You know, clickbait and all that crap. So, but, you know, every time I respond to that, I'm like, this is the best episode to date in regards to non-Mandalorian, which, again, I understand if, again, people just want to see Mando and Baby Yoda. But, you know, for the rest of us Star Wars fans that actually care about the universe, and not just Baby Yoda memes, there's, you know, the idea here is showing us exactly why it took not even 20 years, even though the Empire only lasted, you know, 20-ish so years. Well, probably a little bit longer, 25, whatever I think it was.
Something years. Like that.
And then obviously we got a little bit of drag coming, you know, after Return of the Jedi. So maybe 30 plus years, right? And we know essentially the Empire is actually the First Order, right? All that stuff based off of our good buddy Chuck Windegg and what he wrote in Aftermath. Thanks a lot, Chuck. So, but this episode was great because it showed why nobody liked the New Republic. Because you guys are perfectly right on, you know, the idea of, you know, they're trying to acclimate people back into society and welcoming back. And what do? They basically throw them, you know, numbers, so they're not even named people, right? At least, you know, Ela Kane or whatever her name is as an officer would have been at least Officer Kane or something, you know, whatever she would have been. Dr. Pershing was referred to as Dr. Pershing, right? So it's like, you know, and then the whole point of the episode of why he's stealing that stuff is because the Empire or the New Republic is just dismantling and throwing away all that stuff. So it's like, okay. And then on top of that, they're like parading around these people, these, you know, people that were part of the Empire, parading them around. And then they just throw them into some, like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we're going to be great to have your work continue, Dr. Pershing, welcome, blah, blah, blah. And then they throw them like in some little cubicle. So it's like, they don't even like care about them. And so it just goes to show you, and you know, and it was great because like they're dismantling the Star Destroyer. Like this is why they couldn't withstand the First Order, because the First Order could literally just come in with two Star Destroyers, probably wipe out the whole New Republic because they didn't have anything. You know, it's like, you know, the people are so great that we beat the Empire, but then yet they don't, you know, because Mon Mothma, and again, in theory, democracy is a great thing sometimes, but when you don't have the people leading it, which again, we didn't never had the people leading the Republic or even in the old or the Grand Republic, right? Because it was these high societal people and these, you know, rich people that did all this stuff in the political party and didn't care about the planet itself, right? The people that lived back in their home planet, because they spent, you know, 360 days out of the year in Coruscant, right? They never went back to their planet other than for vacation or to show face or something, right? So it just goes to show you exactly why, you know, the obviously the people were upset when, you know, they're blowing up planets and stuff like that from the First Order, but there probably wasn't much of a struggle. And people are just like, yeah, whatever, you know, there was all this. At the end, it's like people just want to rule themselves, but then all these other people want to keep throwing, whether it's, you know, the Grand Republic, it's the Empire, it's the New Republic, it's the First Order, it's all the same. To your point earlier, Nathan, it's just at least they weren't called the Republic something, right?
And one of the characters who first meets Dr. Mm-hmm. Pershing afterwards even basically says that, oh, Empire, yeah. New Republic, Rebels, I lose track.
Really. Yeah.
Like whoever's in charge. You know, as long as things are going good here on Coruscant, who cares? And it's interesting that they're doing to the Imperial equipment essentially the same thing that they're doing to Dr. Pershing. They're saying, oh, you're Imperial. The only difference is, you know, we can't just literally get rid of you. So we're going to throw you down to this menial job where you don't use any of your skills. And they even acknowledge, oh, yeah, you're super highly qualified to be essentially cataloging things that we're going to throw away, sifting through the trash. All right, Scott, what parallels did you see to other aspects of Star Wars?
So the big connection that I saw from other Star Wars was TIE Interceptors. I don't want to be hung up too much on the dogfighting scenes, but it was cool to see TIE Interceptors again because we haven't really seen them. I don't think we've seen them in Mando before this. And I liked how Mando took a moment to tell Bo-Katan, you know, hey, these aren't just TIE fighters. They're TIE Interceptors, so they're a lot tougher. So they were having to use heavier. Yeah. They were having to use heavier weapons and better tactics to get the jump on them. And of course, we also saw some cool TIE bombers as they were, unfortunately, blowing up Bo-Katan's palace. So that was cool. And, you know, as a kid who grew up with Return of the Jedi era toys, it was cool to see the TIE Interceptor again because that was the cutting edge TIE fighter for the Empire at the time, because that would Return of the Jedi, of course, the first film where they where TIE Interceptors appeared.
Yeah, it was nice to see the TIE bombers too, doing planetary bombing instead of bombing asteroids like they did in Empire Strikes Back. That reminded me a little bit of the old Rogue Squadron video games because you often got to shoot down TIE bombers on planets, and I always thought it was neat to get to do that when we only ever saw them dropping bombs in space in the movies. Because apparently you don't need gravity to drop bombs, and that's older than The Last Jedi. That was in Empire Strikes Back, too.
Yep. You can force proton bombs out of the vehicle with magma rails. Yep.
So I was going to say, it wasn't Star Wars actual, like, related to the universe, but I love how his little radar thing populates, you know, with the enemy ships and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And I totally got to, I don't know, maybe if you got it, Scott, I don't think you've ever seen Aliens, Nathan, but it so looks like the little radar beep beep, and then it shows them, and it's like, okay, here's two or three, and next thing you know, there's like a swarm of them, and it's like, oh, that's the alien.
All over the place. There's movement all over the place.
Game over, man. Game over.
I can't do my Hicks right now because I'm all messed up. But the other sci-fi property that reminded me of, which is so funny that Katie Sackhoff was there, is Battlestar Galactica, because there's a famous scene in Galactica where one Colonial Viper is flying after these two Cylons, and then all of a sudden, like 18,000 triangles come across the top of his screen, and he's like, oh my god, the Cylons are attacking. Yeah.
Yep. Well, speaking of Bo-Katan, our fourth question today does relate to Bo-Katan, and I'm not sure which of you put this question. I know it wasn't me, though, so... Both of you put this question.
I did the first part. I did the second part because I thought, teamwork. Let's keep it on Bo-Katan.
All right. Well,
makes the dream work.
I'll let each of you ask in turn then. So why didn't Bo-Katan tell Mando about the Mythosaur? And what is with Bo-Katan not removing her helmet all of a sudden? Who would like to take that first one?
So I was the one who put the first half. Why didn't Bo tell Mando about the Mythosaur? And my answer is, I think she's having a moment of self-doubt as to whether she really saw that or if it's the underwater pressure and all that stuff is just messing with her head. And she also didn't tell him because it would be tantamount to admitting that she's been wrong about the whole this is the way and that she needs to repent and be all, maybe I should give our people's traditions more more deference than I have been, and I shouldn't be such a surly princess. And as for the second part, what is with her not removing her helmet all of a sudden? When you come face-to-face with a Mythosaur, it changes you, man.
Yeah, I know last time I came face-to-face with a Mythosaur. I mean, I've never seen a Mythosaur in real life. Well, Derek, what are your takes on these questions?
I mean, to me, it's definitely correlating to what Scott's saying. I think she's questioning her faith, plain and simple. She's, you know, whether she's seen Jesus Christ on, you know, some burnt toast and that, or Mary in the clouds or whatever it is, whatever other religions, I don't know, follow enough of them to know what, miracles happen in their day-to-day lives, seeing them in a potato or something, right? Maybe St. Patrick over the weekend. I think that's it, right? And she's questioning her faith, and I think, to Scott's point, she's like, well, maybe I shouldn't take this helmet off. Let's see where this goes, because if I've been following the wrong religion, now is not the time not to screw it up again.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that'll be one of the things that we'll get to hopefully see explore with her character. But I think at some point she is going to have to take it off. Because she will, again, I think, fall the way and become the next villain to Jin at some point here. And she'll get to do a whole scene just like we saw with Anakin and as Darth Vader versus Obi-Wan. And she'll have that slash cracked off of her Mando helmet. So,
very nice. Well, you know, there's a scene in an old movie called Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Where there's a group of three people trying to figure out who's going to be their leader. And one of them looks at the other two and says, well, I vote for yours truly. And the other one looks at the other two and says, well, I vote for yours truly. And the third person says, well, I'm with you guys. So I'm with you guys on this one. I think y'all have covered it very well. I think seeing the Mythosaur just kind of shook Bo-Katan, and she's not real sure, you know, did I really see that? If I did, what does that mean for, you know, what I've been doing and what do I believe? And she, you know, was probably not wanting to stray from the way now, because the Mythosaur might eat her, or a very realosaur.
Yeah. Or the other Mandalorians will let her have it. I mean, as Mando said, true. When they approach to the covert, trust me, it'll be better if you keep your helmet on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, going back to the other part of the episode here, do you think Aliyah Kane is still working for the Empire, for Moff Gideon directly, for someone else? Is she striking on her own? What's going on there? And what's going to happen with Dr. Pershing? Derek, let's start with you on this one.
So what I'm hoping here is that Moff Gideon is still in jail. Right, he's been transplanted to a thing, but he's running it just like the mafia kingpin does within jail, right? So he's got all of his guys out there. He's the head honcho, right? Maybe we'll see where he comes in and he gets, you know, the whole checked in and all that stuff, and you know, has to do the whole, you know, clan and gang war inside the prison. And we get to see an episode of that and how he's like basically still the top dog within it, right? Because that would be Moff Gideon's way of, like I said, taking it over and still handling stuff. And to that point, is then that's how he got to Kane, and that's what she's doing, right? So all his henchmen out there in the so-called New Republic are still working for the Empire in some capacity. So, and what happens to Dr. Pershing? Well, I don't know. Is he going to get total recall? Maybe. We'll see.
All right. Well, Scott, what's your take on this one?
Commander Kane is still definitely working for the Empire. She is a quintessential double agent at this point, and she does still report to Moff Gideon himself. He did break out of the prison, so he's running things from secret Imperial safe houses and bases and whatnot. And there was a confusing moment for me when she was talking to the other recruits or reintegration personnel, where they said, I heard Moff Gideon had, you know, escaped from his prison transport. And she said, oh, that was just a cover story. And I don't know if she was trying to sow misinformation about, you know, oh, he didn't really escape, they're covering something up, and he's dead. Or if she said that because that was just a cover story because he didn't have to escape. He had, you know, allies on the inside that essentially let him go free. Because I think he has a network of former ISB and whatnot all over the place in the New Republic, and she's just one of them. And in fact, to the point about what will happen to Dr. Pershing, Commander Kane did what she did because Dr. Pershing was a loose end. He knows about the whole plan with the cloning and what they were really trying to do and using it for immortality and how it works. And Moff Gideon doesn't want that information in the hands of the New Republic. So he had her pull the sting operation on him, but it was a triple cross because she really did it to make sure that she could get Dr. Pershing into the Mind Flayer. Side note, Mind Flayers are having a moment, aren't they? They were all about Mind Flayers in Stranger Things. Of course, we'll probably see one in the Dungeons & Dragons movie. And then here we are with a Mind Flayer being a term in Star Wars. So, yeah, good time to be an Illithid.
Absolutely. So I agree with you, Scott, that Moff Gideon has probably escaped or has been let go by people who are sympathetic to the First Order or the Empire. And I think that because of that conversation that they had about, oh, I heard he escaped. Oh, well, no, that's a cover up for something. I think something has happened and they've got just enough news to know that he's not standing trial. So that's why I think he's probably escaped.
But you guys are missing the best part, though. If he's still in jail, maybe we'll get to see Andy Serkis.
Oh, that would be cool.
He's still in prison.
now, see, I thought that Andy Serkis probably died.
I don't think Andor. So. I think they just put him back in and he's working his rotation shifts. So.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, now, because
there were several other escapees that got recaptured.
That's true. That's true. So, okay. So if that happens and we see Andy Serkis as the prison
foreman, whatever.
Yeah. And we also see the first Snoke clones, also portrayed by Andy Serkis. Well, then we only have to pay the actor once, right?
Yeah, I don't think how SAG works.
Because maybe Andy Serkis, because he, you know, finally Moff Gideon, that's who helps him. You guys said he had somebody on the inside, so Andy Serkis gets rewarded by being get tested for cloning.
If that's not how SAG works, I want to know how much D. Bradley Baker is getting paid on a per-clone basis.
The answer is a lot. This is D. Bradley Baker is getting paid a lot, especially for a voice actor.
Yeah, that's probably true. But, you know, regardless, my thinking is he probably has escaped. Sorry, I would like to see Andy Serkis again. As far as what happened to Dr. Pershing, you know, we see the machine turn from blue to red. Classic sign of, you know, going from good to bad, especially in Star Wars, you know, with the lightsabers. I think that she's essentially wiping out kind of his personality and who he is.
Yeah.
But leaving the technical knowledge so that the First Order can use him to continue their own cloning experiments, but do so in a way where he's not likely to go, oh, well, I'm going back to the Republic because I have ethics and I don't want to kill the baby.
Huh. That's an interesting take, is that but it didn't strike me as her being surgical in her removal at all. It looked, she just like turned the dial up to 11 to just blank the hard drive. That's what it looked like to me.
Well, I think that's what this machine does, is that it leaves your technical capabilities intact while kind of eliminating who you are underneath. It's brainwashing. Yes, it's brainwashing. It's setting us up for how they get their soldiers in the First Order.
Oh, maybe. I feel like, though, that the Mind Flayer, it flays your mind. It doesn't, you know, wash it.
Well, flay just means that you take the skin off.
Yeah, but brains don't have skin, so...
So you're taking the surface level off. You're taking the personality and the ethics off, and leaving the training, because I'm convinced this is setting up for we are using the same device years from now with the First Order to get their soldiers, and this is how they're brainwashing them, but they're leaving whatever training they have with, you know, firearms and whatnot. And it, so while it doesn't always work, as we see with
that. That makes sense. And the machine definitely has multiple levels of intensity, because, I mean, there's a dial, and Admiral Akbar guy, or, you know, Mon Cal guy was all like, no, we're not going to use it at that high of a setting. But for this particular instance with Dr. Pershing, Kane looked like she cranked that thing, baby, like hours goes to 11. You know what I'm saying?
It is interesting to me that he's like, no, this is not a mind flayer device. And also we're going to use it at these low levels, but yet we kept the knob that goes to 11.
We still have the ability to do the high level.
We didn't bother to adjust the machine to where the highest setting is still safe.
Right. There is a unsafe one. Kabloop. Anyway, maybe you're right. Maybe she, but I feel like that her whole thing with the mind flayer here with Dr. Pershing is to tie up loose ends and make sure that the New Republic can't ever find that stuff in his brain. But maybe you're right. And that'll be super cool if she somehow turns him into like a walking data bank. He's like a zombie, but he still knows how to make strand casts of clones. That'd be wild.
The next Echo.
Could be. Maybe. Yeah.
Heart machine. Rah.
Yeah, he'll get one of those things like Lobot.
Maybe.
That is possible. We've seen some of those on other characters, too.
He won't be able to talk anymore, so maybe.
It's not. Well, the other characters who have had those have been able to talk. Lobot just doesn't.
I think he just chooses not to. I don't think he can't.
I thought he couldn't, so that's why he had everything, so he could data transmit all of his thoughts everywhere, so.
Maybe at a certain point, he's like, this is way more efficient than talking. I'm so tired of talking.
Well, if you had telepathy, why would you talk ever again, right?
That's a fair point. Yeah. If I was a mind flayer, I'd have telepathy. Wait, no, we're crossing back into D&D. I think that's a sure sign that we should take a break between the episodes that we're talking about. So we'll hear from Kevin about other shows that we can listen to.
The real Kevin.
The real Kevin, yes. Not us pretending to be Kevin, because... spoiler alert, I have not memorized the entire promo.
It's only a minute and 53 seconds long. Come on, man.
I know. What am I doing? But, you know, if any of these things happen that we've been talking about in future episodes of The Mandalorian, we will be back to talk about them. But for now, here's what else you can hear on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kevin. I'm not sure why we didn't have you actually come do this in person last week like we did just now. But good job, as always. You know.
Here's your dark side cookie.
Yes. Yeah. Do you prefer the yellow ones or the red ones? Ah, such a great thing. You know that people will be showing up to conventions cosplaying as Imperials with those cookies from here till the end of the universe. The
dark popsicles. They're going to be like $50 a piece at Disney parks now.
So. Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
And they'll sell the cookies. They'll sell the travel biscuits. They'll
sell the pack of those cookies too, with the Imperial or the Rebel logo on them.
You can get, I'm sure you'll be able to buy them in the tin that looks like
the big black brief. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But it'll just be like thin aluminum, you know?
I know that we are, moving on to Bad Batch, but do you guys think that Commander Kane really did salvage those from the ship, or does she have a stash because she's still checking in with her Imperial handlers every so often?
I think she did get them from the ship, but as a matter of convenience, because she doesn't have a bunch of yellow ones.
She did that whole train thing. That was just a ploy. She could just walk into that thing whenever she wants.
Yeah, I mean, she probably did take the train there, but when the ticket droid came by, she just showed them the ticket because the New Republic gave her a ticket. Because it's like, hey, I need these in order to do the thing.
Yeah.
Classic case of entrapment there, because he would not have done this without her suggesting it. But anyways, they don't have our laws in the Star Wars universe, so entrapment's
not part of the problem. Yeah.
But moving on to other parts of the Star Wars universe, we have an episode of The Bad Batch. And as much as I love the episode of The Mandalorian this week, The Bad Batch was also an episode of Star Wars. It was not nearly... I'm not going to go so far as to give it a thumbs down, but I give it a hearty thumbs sideways. It was definitely an episode. So, Derek, I'm not even going to ask you the first question.
Yeah, Scott, I was going to say, I have a favorite part.
All right. So we have the episode Pabu, where the Bad Batch goes to this island, goes to Pabu, goes to an island on Pabu, and hangs out with the locals there. But the locals are all refugees from the Empire and other assorted villainous aspects of the Star Wars universe. So, Derek, what was your favorite part of this episode that you loved so much?
Hunter actually smiles.
All right, and there we go. So, Scott, what is your favorite part of this episode?
I actually enjoyed most of this episode. I give it a thumbs up, and here's the main reason why. You know how I've been complaining about how everything is so freaking dark on the Bad Batch? We had tunnels, we had mines, we had freighters. This episode was so not that.
It was so bright, I had to wear my sunglasses inside.
It was so bright, I had to wear sunglasses on the beach. We had beautiful sunsets, which is, again, about light. And there was even a point in the episode where Fee tells everybody to hang tight and watch all these cool lights come on at night because it's getting too dark and we got to brighten things up. I'm like, thank you, Dave. Thank you for listening to my complaints about all the darkness and making an episode about light and the light of man helping his fellow man, because the Bad Batch helps save the day when the freaking tidal wave comes and wrecks Lower Pabu.
Yes. You see, we have a limited light budget and it just all went to this episode. Yeah. That's why all the other episodes have been so dark.
There's a section of the closing credits for every production that has a whole crew that talks about lighting. There ain't a section of people that do darkening now, is there?
It is, after all, industrial light and magic.
That's right. It's industrial darkness and magic.
Hey, we can start our own brand, guys.
I think we could. I think we would fail horribly, but we could do it. Yeah.
We just could put up a black screen and we're millionaires.
Sure. I'm sure that's exactly how that will go.
We can just do our own voiceovers on the background. You can't see who's doing what.
No, it won't work. It won't work because here in the streaming era, haven't you heard me talk about how all the blacks get crushed because of the video compression? It's never going to work.
So anyways, I had a favorite part of this episode, and my favorite part of this episode was Fee, and her not just being Wanda Sykes, because I felt, when she was first introduced, that's what I felt like, was we got a high profile voice and just had her be her instead of portraying a character. And I felt here, we really got to see her as a character, and why she's doing some of the things that she's doing. So I did like getting more information on her, more background. And that was definitely the highlight of the episode for me. Because moving on to the next question, what do we dislike most about this episode? For me, it was a good bit of the rest of the episode.
The best thing of the episode wasn't even the Bad Batch.
That's true. The best thing was not the Bad Batch. I didn't hate the Bad Batch in this one either. It was nice to get to see them, you know, go somewhere where they're, you know, not having to have an adventure. Oh, wait, the Bad Batch showed up. Something has to happen so that they have to do something. It felt really convenient that we have this tidal wave. It's been years since we had one. We had no warning that this one was coming, but all of a sudden the Bad Batch shows up and an emergency happens where they have to help out the people here.
Why must every 22 minutes of my life be filled with catastrophe?
Exactly. Yes. It's like, oh, yep,
they have to realize it's not the universe. It's just them.
Right. Yep. Perhaps so. From here, though, we'll go in the opposite. Scott, what was your least favorite thing about this episode?
I disliked the little girls taking the boat out on the ocean by themselves. I feel like all of the parents there would not have let that happen. They would have sent Wrecker or the mayor or even just Fee herself or to go with them. That seemed unrealistic to me. I know that they were... I know that they were setting up the mayor's daughter to be, she's really great with her own boat and everything. And then, you know, maybe I'm just not enough of an islander culture, but I don't think they would have let them go out with a powered craft. If it had been like a little, you know, catamaran or a sailing deal, a paddle board, whatever. I'm losing it. Anyway, that was the part.
That was the part. All right. Parents. Derek, what was your least favorite part? Teach
you nothing, did she, Scott? So... no, but mine was actually kind of, you were saying a bit, Nathan, it's like, can't the Bad Batch just catch a break? Like I was enjoying the episode. Don't get me wrong. I get it. You know, it's tiresome at this point because again, it's nothing about the whole plot other than if all of a sudden this was the last two episodes of the series finale and it was going to be the Bad Batch retirement plan. Right. And I'd be like, hey, okay. Our heroes, right off into the sunset, right? But it's not going to be that because, one, we still have several episodes afterwards. And two, it was just kind of like, here we go again. Like, it would have just been nice had it just been a nice, quiet episode and had more character development because I think, like I was joking around, I mean, it was nice to actually see Hunter smile. It was nice to see Omega, you know, kind of going this way. And it's like, oh, well, maybe there is an opportunity out there for something other than, you know, having to go and blow up everything. Now, granted, we know the Empire is going to have to, for whatever reason, come and, you know, disrupt and destroy everything. It's just like, okay, yeah, we know the Empire's bad. Okay, whatever, move on. But, you know, I think that was the most disheartening thing. It was just like, okay, good thing the Bad Batch were here then to save everyone, right? Because otherwise there might have been too many people that didn't make it. So and they didn't kill the old chef guy. That was good. So he actually lived. So
yeah, that was good. Yeah, I agree with you. This episode I think would have just been better without the tidal wave. You know, let them have a character development episode where, you know, they go to a peaceful island and they see, you know, this is a huge change of pace for us. And you know, how do we as characters deal with that? But you know, they can't get that change of pace. Action follows them, even when there's not a particular reason why. But we'll get back into that one. So the next question, as always, is what connections did you draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy? Derek, did you draw any other connections to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy? Because I'm kind of struggling.
I mean, at least we know now that Star Wars has sushi. So, but...
yep.
Otherwise... there were no pushy carts in this episode, so there was none of that. they still use wooden ladders for that came out. Almost kind of looked like I was hoping that there was going to be a box there or something so we could have gotten a Lord of the Rings Two Towers reference, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, I was waiting for the Uruk-hai to start building up.
And I was really hoping that they were going to be like, this is no island. This is a Jedi temple. And I thought that's what we were going to go with, but that didn't end up happening. So... And yeah,
so that's a lot of not connections there. Scott, did you draw any actual connections?
So the beginning part where Fee is making a deal for the ceramic bonsai tree that just so happens to be a miniature version of the tree that they have there on Pabu, so that's kind of cool. It just so happens to be. That's the whole reason she wanted it. I liked the fact that we are shown that artifacts, even when they don't have force powers or any particular secret passageways or inscriptions on them, are still valuable in the Star Wars galaxy, because you had Fee making a deal with those other mercenaries, and it was a callback to Luthen and his whole cover story of being a rare antiquities dealer, because clearly there's lots of money in this. And so I liked that that there was still lots of money in it with Fee and Omega. Although, once again, irresponsible parenting. Why is the child at the table with the deadly mercenaries while you're trying to cut a deal?
I understand the whole...
Right. I'm mentoring her. Sure, that's what we're calling child labor these days. Mentoring. Anyway, but yes, there we go. The connection is rare art is a big deal in Star Wars. Something that I will mention again later this year, I'm sure, when we talk about Admiral Thrawn and his obsession with art on Ahsoka, because I still think that's happening exactly like that.
Yeah, especially with seeing the Pergil in The Mandalorian. I'm going to draw one singular connection, and that is we went to a planet that seems to have one biome, which is a thing that happens in Star Wars. It's an ocean planet, has an island. That's pretty much it. Kind of like Octo in that sense.
Or Kefbir.
Or Mon Calamari.
Or Mon Calamari, yep.
Yeah. Although I'm not sure Mon Cala has any islands.
I thought they had some that we saw.
Camino,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost all water there. The only time we see the surface of Camino or anything above the surface is the platforms, which are definitely artificial. I don't know that we ever see land there. For Mon Cala, I know we see islands there in some of the EU stuff, but I'm not sure if we've seen any in...
There wasn't anything in the Clone Wars there? Okay.
No, there was an episode or an arc that featured Mon Cala, but it was all underwater.
I can't remember. Was that Mon Cala or was that at Naboo too?
That was definitely on Mon Cala.
Okay,
at the end, the Mon Cals needed reinforcements, and they called upon the Gungans because the Gungans are also an aquatic race.
Okay, so they called on the Gungans. Okay, couldn't
remember. Yeah, and the Gungans come save the day, and it turns out they're way cooler underwater than on the surface.
That's for sure. But I did think of one other thing that we didn't do, and that happened to be Scott jostled my memory there with the beginning of the episode, because I just forgot really actually honestly all about that scene.
It almost didn't need to be there.
I just thought about Pabu, you know? So my reference is actually with the poison bug. Would have been like...
Oh, yes! Yes! Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. Yeah, that did happen.
It's again not related to Star Wars, but Star Trek. I completely thought that one of the Bad Batch was going to totally get laid because this was like shore leave with Ryza, and you know we were going to have all that, but that didn't happen since it's a kid's show. So.
Yet,
yeah.
In between,
they haven't left. I think Brown Eyes has got a chance.
Word.
So, moving as far away from that as we possibly can. Question number four, I wrote this one in, and I've made a couple references to it so far already, but I want to get y'all's opinion on it. What caused this wave in the first place? Because near as I can tell, it's because the story needed it. Any other possible reasons that we can think of?
Well, the mayor talks a little bit about how Pabu is somewhat geologically unstable and that they get titles. What, they didn't call it a tidal wave. What
Tremors.
Did they call it? A sea surge?
I think they use both ocean of those surge. Terms in the episode, actually.
Anyway.
Tremor that caused, I don't know.
Yeah. So he talked about how they've had some, but they've never had any go, up that high for the past 30 years. So he was not surprised by the tremors that, of course, tremors will cause a tidal wave. He was surprised by the severity of it. So, yeah. As far as what causes it, it seems like it's just a natural part of this planet's progression. It's like that's how its tectonics go.
All right. Any ideas, Derek?
Nope. But apparently they didn't think about that as they continued to build the city outward, beyond the high peak and the wall. So you think maybe next time they might come up with a better plan in case that needs to happen again, right? So if it's going to happen every 30 years and or so, then they should plan for a better system.
Yeah, definitely. It hasn't happened in 30 years doesn't mean that you should build permanent structures in the danger zone. Be like building right on top of a fault here in the United States. Of course, then again, California is a thing, so.
And people live in Florida, and there's hurricanes that go through all the time.
That's
right?
True.
Right, rebuilding in Lakeland, Florida after hurricanes. Oh, wait, we did.
Yeah. All right. Well, now question number five. How many episodes do we have before the Bad Batch leaves Naboo? Derek, what do you think? Are we staying here for a while?
Nope. I think they're gone next episode.
All right.
Because maybe they'll be there for several days or several weeks or several months, maybe even. Because I feel like the way the relationship with them and Sid is pissed about whatever, even though she's the one that's treated them like crap this whole time. So again, more hate towards clones. And, you know, I don't really understand where things went truly sour. I understand, obviously, you know, with what happened with Sid leaving them on the planet, right? But like, as she said, you guys got your own ship stalled, right? And, you know, we had the whole thing with the whole race and don't turn your back on Sid, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay. But I thought she was making them good money. Like, I don't understand why all of a sudden she wouldn't be liking them. But maybe.
Go ahead. It's weird because they keep saying that that they're making her good money, which if they're making her good money, that means that they should be getting good money too. But then we never actually see them, you know, get a good score.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, I'm not 100% sure. So maybe at this point she is just pissed off at them. They're not bringing in what they're supposed to be anymore. Even though she could probably, instead of sending them on missions, maybe just use them as muscle. Because whenever they're used as muscle, that works really
well. That works, yeah.
So So maybe Sid's just a poor planner. I don't know. Or, you know, anyways.
They don't seem great at getting things done, but they seem really good at making sure no one else does either.
So, yeah, I don't know. But anyways, so I'm guessing, you know, they're going to be – that's why they were liking this, you know, on Pabu, because then they didn't have to worry about Sid, because Sid doesn't know about that, right? The Empire, in theory, doesn't know about this. Though, you know, Chef jinxed himself because, you know, what about the Empire? They're like, well, we'll just deal with it. The Empire happens to find us. And it's like, well, great. Now you just jinxed us all, because now the Bad Batch is here. We escaped this calamity. And next episode, bam. But it would be nice if we actually had like several episodes of them now using this as their home base and maybe going on missions with Fee. Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So, so you're thinking that next episode is going to be it. Now, are you thinking like...
But I would be happy if it wasn't.
Yeah, you'd be happy if it wasn't. But are you thinking like opening sequence is them saying, well, it's been great to be here, but we got to go. Or are you thinking like by the end, something has happened that causes them to have to leave?
By the end, the Empire comes and captures Omega.
All right. So you're thinking next episode will be based on Pabu. But then by the end, we're out. Scott, do you agree with that? Do you have other opinions?
I agree completely, and I think that it will happen halfway through next episode that they have to leave. And I do think that Omega will get captured, but that will happen while they're off Pabu doing whatever it is that pulls them away. Like, they'll have to go confront Sid, or worse, Sid's the one who sends somebody to kidnap Omega to get the guys to come back to her.
Could be. All right, well, I'm going to slightly disagree with you both. I'm still going to say it's just one more episode, but I think we are going to start off with them saying, well, it's been great to be here, but this episode is going to be completely different and based somewhere else entirely, because last time we thought that one episode was going to roll into the other and make a lot of coherent sense, it didn't. And that was back on those Ipsum mines or whatever they were.
Almost the entire season of this.
Well, but see, but most episodes don't seem like they're leading naturally into another episode.
Or leading anywhere.
Okay. Not totally disagreeing with you there. But all right, well, that about does it for our discussion on this episode of The Bad Batch. We spent a bit more time on The Mandalorian, but I think there was more to talk about there. So
it was almost an hour long too, Scott.
Yes, it was a very long episode of The Mandalorian. That was very nice. Yes, very much so. I was happy.
So with that, it is time to do Derek's favorite part of the show. What Star Wars t-shirt are we wearing today? And Derek, with it being your favorite part of the episode, let's let you go first. What do you got? We have Ahsoka versus Maul Chibi Edition. Very nice.
And it's balanced because he's got a dual-bladed lightsaber and Ahsoka has two lightsabers. So
yes, she does. All right, Scott, what are you wearing today?
Well, a longtime friend of the show and lifelong friend of mine, Stephen Suits, got me this cool Mandalorian shirt from Disney World when he went to Galaxy's Edge, and it's Mando with his disintegration rifle firing up the jetpack and flying up into the sky. And it says Rising Mandalorian. Yeah, good stuff. Very nice. Good stuff.
Well, my good friend, Stephen Suits, who may or may not be the same good friend as yours, went to Disney and got me something other than a t-shirt. But I'm showing it off anyway, pretending that it's a t-shirt. This is a Chewbacca water bottle koozie thing. It's got a bandolier strap on it. So sweet. I can walk around as Chewbacca with water by my side. Or I could put other stuff in this. But you know what? This is one of those cool circle things where you got the flavored water in it. He got me that too. That's really awesome. Really happy with it. And that beats your silly t-shirt any day of the week. Also, he said that they didn't have any really good Chewbacca t-shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
So does it keep your drink cold or warm?
Yes. I'm not sure which yet. I'll let you know once I've used it more.
Whatever status it had when I put it in the insulation, it stays that way.
It's not all that insulated, to be honest. I think it's more of a it holds the thing. So that I don't have to carry it with me. But, you know, it'll be great, you know, if I do go to a theme park like Disney or Dollywood, which I'm way more likely to go to because it's closer and cheaper. I can, you know, walk around with this instead of having to carry something in my hands. So very excited about it. Very happy with it. Scott, I'm not going to make you tell everybody where you can find us. Derek, you get that job today instead.
All right. That's not like we have a done.
I appreciate that,
though. So to get your own t-shirt of What a Piece of Junk, head on over to T Public Store, and you can find all cool merchandise with the What a Piece of Junk logo, as well as the Fandom Podcast Network logo, whether that's shirts, hoodies, bandanas. They still sell masks. Mouse pads, if people still use mouse pads, you know, mugs, pens, all sorts of cool stuff. Whatever you want to put a logo on, I'm sure T Public sells it. But not only that, but if you want to also hear us and any other of the Fandom Podcast Network, please go to fpnet.podbean.com, which is the master feed, and download the Podbean app. But you can also find us on any platform that has podcasts for download and or streaming, which is Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play. Anywhere you can find the Fandom Podcast Network, you'll find What a Piece of Junk. You can also find us on the Facebook, which is What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, which I run. Scott runs the email, which is whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com, as well as the Twitter account, which is @WhatWars. And Kyle runs the Instagram on the Fandom Podcast Network. But again, go to those pages, go to the podcast reviews, leave comments so that way we can know whatever you want us to talk about more of, less of, what you like, don't like, all that stuff. But on reviews, Nathan, why don't you hit up the listeners on what they can do with helping support the channel, even though we're all doing this for fun, but how they can support the channel on the reviews.
Well, yeah, we have fun with this, and we hope that you have fun with this too. And if you want other people to have fun with it, then leaving us a review is a great way to get the word out to other people. The better reviews that we get, the more people see our show and get to listen to us talk about Star Wars. So it also lets us know what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. We love to get 5-star reviews, but please give us the reviews that you feel like we deserve and let us know what we can do to make the listening experience even better for you. And if you do give us a great review, I promise not to turn the dial up on the Mind Flayer.
I think that's a worthy exchange.
And we might next time give you some biscuits.
That's we right. might. I'm not promising it, though, because I'm scared of jumping off trains. I don't think we would survive that the way they did. But, you know, no. I got to find a recipe where I can make some biscuit-like things for that. That would be
It looked like it was just a piece of shortbread. Just make some shortbread cookies.
Yeah, shortbread cookies that are cut out.
Put a little symbol on there.
Yeah.
Boom. Got it.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
That might be happening.
That sounds delicious, and I'm eager to be your guinea pig as you refine your shortbread recipe.
Very good. Very good. Well, we want to thank you all, the listeners, for listening to our episode. Remember to find us on social media. Hit us up with your thoughts, reviews, comments, suggestions, all of that. We want to make this podcast as enjoyable as possible for ourselves and for you. So remember to always respect each other and respect each other's fandoms. And, well, I guess I have to tell myself to punch it today.
Oh, I can tell you.
All right.
All right, Nathan. Turn the dial to 11. I mean, punch it.